This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, everybody. Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
What slipped up and threw his rock to a fiend. He be playing like a willy because he dressed you up. Never knowing that his woman is in need of love. He got Versace, gold link, stomach chains with rocks. Official hairstyle, but you stuck up in the spot. Making love, Duke is weak, then he falling asleep. You on the phone with your old peeps, dying to creep between my sheets. So what you got, Chanel on your feet, hot sex on a platter makes the mission complete.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, with you live here on this Monday evening, back inside the PTBN studios, as always, for our journey into the world of 80s WWF. And joining me on that journey is my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scotland, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 493 of the longest-running episodic motherfucking gold standard. Good evening, JR. Question for you before we dive in. Of course, it is 4th of July week.
Yep.
What do you think of – I know you're – when it comes to uniforms, I know you're a purist when it comes to your beloved Bombers who are taking on the Braves tonight. What do you think of the whole, like, Major League Baseball doing the whole Independence Day, like, jerseys and hats and all that? Do you think it – like, do you care? Does it look shitty on the Yankee uniforms? Do you think it should be optional? Should they not do it at all? Because I was watching it today. I had your game on a little bit, and I'm thinking, I don't know if I like the stars and the numbers and all that kind of crap. Do you care either way? Or I was just curious. I never really talked to you about it, but
makes me think of baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, Herb Chevrolet. No, I mean, I think it's fine. I don't care. I mean, whatever. Everything's monetized these days. You get ads on football jerseys, ads on basketball jerseys. I mean, whatever. It's just a way to sell more merchandise and position it.
Yep.
It's no different than the breast cancer awareness and the Father's Day prostate stuff and, you know, all the other
gaga.
So, yeah, no, I don't care. It doesn't bother me at this point. I mean,
well, it felt like this year they amped down the Mother's Day and Father's Day. They just did they didn't change the jerseys. They put, like, I think they put the pink ribbon and the blue ribbon on the jerseys. And I think the hats might have been pink and blue, but they didn't do the jerseys this year. But they really pimped up the 4th of July. And then, of course, they do the All-Star stuff, which, of course, is red, white, and blue, because it is the Nationals are doing the All-Star game this year. You've been to that ballpark, right? You've been in Nationals Park.
Yeah, it's
do you
really
like
nice.
It?
I'll tell you, I went to Citizens Bank last week, and it was fucking gorgeous.
It is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never been there for a Phillies game. I saw Billy Joel there, and I think the ballpark's really nice. I hate the fucking team in it, most of the fans, but it's a nice ballpark, though.
Part of it is, you know, it was like 70 degrees, perfect night. The Yankees killed the Phillies. Like, you know, it was like packed. It was like a cool atmosphere. Like, I don't, you know, if you catch me on a 100 degree night against,
right,
you know, fucking whatever, Reds or some shit team, like I may feel differently.
Yeah.
But on that specific right night with Severino killing them and like perfect weather and no, you know, kids right to worry about, it was like, you know, it was like the perfect ballpark atmosphere. And they're pretty lax too. Like, we bought $30 seats and we were up in the upper deck, but then we walked around, went to like get some food in the concourse, came back, and we just kind of jumped in other seats. And yeah, no, it was all, whole experience was pretty cool. So, and my son's into my mascot, yep, so I got him a little Philly fanatic, which he's been super into. So that was
oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
excellent.
That's it. So, all right, it's been a while.
I like that ballpark.
Good.
Very
okay.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's been a while since our guy with us tonight, our third man, has been with us, at least for this format. I guess he was with us a couple weeks ago, but it was kind of different. But he has been a while since he's been here to talk to MSG, so let's not make him wait any longer. And that is, of course, the voice behind the WorldCast podcast, at the Garden, maybe still sometimes. Mount Olympus, maybe
oh,
still
well,
sometimes.
Long gone. Long gone.
Former Titan of Wrestling, and that's Kelly Nelson. I can't keep up with all your shit, Kelly. How are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah, I guess it's been almost 5 months.
I think,
wow,
February was the last time you were here for an MSG.
Yeah. Great.
It's like you didn't even miss a beat, though, when you look at some of the matches tonight. Yeah.
No.
But you were here a couple weeks ago, I should say, because we did do our preview to WrestleMania 4 show, and that was a lot of fun, as always.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Even though my audio was kind of garbled throughout, and of course it was the one episode where I'm talking for 50 or 75% of the time or whatever.
That's right. But, because Pete's speech is garbled half the time too, so it's good.
Yeah.
Good to have you back, Kel. Good to have you back.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, JR, you mentioned the garden, and we have returned. I tell you, the layout, the landscape in the World Wrestling Federation right now, very different.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time in many, many moons.
First time since we started this, really. It's very different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. We have a brand new World Wrestling Federation champion, the Macho Man Randy Savage, who of course won the title at WrestleMania 4. This card tonight looks like WrestleMania 4 in many ways, but we may actually get some better matches. We'll see. The date, gentlemen, is April 25th, 1988. So we're about a month out of WrestleMania 4, live from our hallowed home on 33rd and 6th, Madison Square Garden in New York City. Kel, your first visit here since we looked back last episode, JR. It was like November, right, or October?
I think so.
And the calendar, yeah. Not real life. Yeah, it was like November or October.
Almost.
So it's good to have you back, Kel. Yeah, yeah, I know, right? It almost
it was February 19th for the November house show. That was the last time you were here, Kelly.
Okay.
So there you go. From Madison Square Garden, again, the first house show with kind of a different setup in terms of champions and whatnot.
Yep.
The only other show in this evening, we don't have a full card. Graham at thehistoryofwwe.com did not have the matches, but they were up at the Forum in Montreal. Mr. Nelson, and you're the other side of the country from where you are, but only two matches, both of them rematches. Well, one was a rematch, one wasn't. The Islanders and Bobby Heenan against the British Bulldogs and Coco. Of course, that was a WrestleMania 4 rematch. And Andre the Giant, so we will not see the big guy tonight, took on Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Mm-hmm. So those are the only two matches that Graham had, but I'm sure they had a full card, so. We had two titles change hands in Atlantic City, JR. So we got two new champions, including the big one.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got. So any other dive in?
Yeah, I got a few notes from Mr. Greenhouse here. on April 2nd, 88, Superstars, Andre the Giant fought Brian Costello to a no contest when he tossed his opponent out of the ring before the bout began. After the match, Jim Duggan came out to ringside to challenge Andre. Andre choked Duggan. And Duggan fought back by knocking him out with his 2x4. Andre came to and attacked officials and a cameraman. And Bobby Heenan, once again, would become Andre's manager, purchasing the contract back from Teddy Biasi. So we are done with that partnership. I think it worked out pretty well for both sides. I think DiBiase benefited greatly from Andre. And I think Bobby made some cash. I believe if you look at the numbers of the transaction, I think he ended up making... What, he sold them for like $100,000 and buys them back for $10,000 or something like that.
Oh, wow.
So I think I remember reading that somewhere once. Mm. So there you go. So, yeah. So he's back there, and that has ignited that feud that you mentioned a minute ago, Scott, Andre, and Duggan. So mm-hmm. at least while Hogan's out doing his thing for a bit. So on 4-9, Craig DeGeorge had an interview with Rick Rude and Bobby Heenan where Rude debuted his new Rude Awakening Kiss after bringing a woman to the audience from the interview platform. So before or after matches, he would bring a lady to the ring and put a little smooch on her. It's called the Rude Awakening. On 4-23, a segment aired where it was announced that Hulk Hogan had won the Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Award for Male Athlete of the Year. And Rick Rude defeated Jake Milliman, the old milkman, at 143.
Yes.
With the Rude Awakening move. After the match, he confronted a woman at ringside, attempted to give her the post-match Rude Awakening kiss, but she rejected him, saying she was Jake Roberts' wife. After being slapped, Rude grabbed her by the arm until Roberts made the save, and they brawled to the back before being separated. So it looks like a match that we saw WrestleMania 4 has now become a feud. More on that, I'm sure, to come. And originally announced for this show was a match between Ricky Steamboat and Greg Valentine in yet another WrestleMania 4 rematch that was canceled when Steamboat left the WWF, and I don't think Valentine is even on the show, so I guess he was end up giving the night off. So that'll do it for our notes. So why don't we head inside the garden? Gorilla Monsoon and Lord Al Hayes welcome us in to set up the night of action, refresh us on Randy Savage's big night in Atlantic City. Gorilla says Liz is the first ever female manager of a world champion. So there you go. And that does bring us to our opening match with Brady Boone taking on Steve Lombardi. tough start here. Boone does have a good look. I'll give him that. He's eschewed the Billy Jack Haynes cosplay gear that he was working in for the last 6 months or so.
Yes, we
get some stalling to start as Gorilla says Lombardi graduate honors from the Terry Garvin School of Self-Defense. So there you go. getting rolling right away. Al hammers to Joe Combs saying he strives for good positioning and gets behind his opponents. Gorilla says Pat Patterson has spent many hours with him as well. So they're really just beating this thing into the ground. He says Patterson, his outstanding moves are on display here, and Al says he's influenced his career quite a bit. So he's really just really hammering it home.
Utterly ridiculous.
Lombardi's knee is all taped up, which Gorilla also makes note of. And Lombardi starts to work the midsection to get things going. Boone comes back with a flurry of offense to send Steve to the floor. Boone works the arm as he talks about, as Gorilla talks about Boone starting the team with Scott Casey. We also get some WrestleMania 4 talk, and Gorilla says Bobby has been banned from wearing a dog catcher jacket in the ring ever again, which Al doesn't care for because it's his right to protect himself from Matilda. Lombardi, it's kind of like an allegory for the gun control debate, I guess. Lombardi finally pancakes Boone and then clotheslines him to the floor to turn the tide. Lombardi slingshots him back in, stomps and chokes away. Lombardi works a chin lock for a bit, but Boone breaks out and tries a comeback that ends quickly when he eats knees on a splash. We get more WrestleMania talk as Lombardi's kicking away. Boone gets dumped again, climbs back in where he's met with a clothesline for two. Boone comes back with a suplex and heats up a bit with some nice offense. Boone tries to go to the middle rope. Lombardi catches him and hits a back suplex, but Gorilla says he's clueless on what to do next. Lombardi eats a boot on a charge, and Boone lands a German into a bridge for the win, which I like that finish. I thought Boone looked solid, and Lombardi's just Lombardi. All fine, a bit long and meandering, just a touch, but in the end it was proficient and a good finish, which Al says Lombardi blew his chance as he had this one. The commentary carried it a bit, but I thought Boone looked pretty decent. I went a star and a half on this one, Scott.
Your match time, do you even want to take a guess? How long do you think this was?
12 minutes.
14:57.
Yeah. Good grief.
Yeah, I mean, first off, we have to talk about this right off the bat. I understand, okay, that these guys get bored once in a while. And they need to entertain themselves on these local shows, you know, MSG, you know, the Spectrum, Boston, Cap Center. I get it. Some of these matches are dreadfully dull, but this just got out of hand. I mean, they spent literally the first 3 minutes coming up with every single Garvin and Pat Patterson innuendo, rumor and innuendo that you could possibly think of. The best one is Alfred when he goes, and what did he say? When Lombardi gets you from behind, he knows how to take over. Like, seriously?
Al's not even like Gorilla's a little coy about it. I mean, Al's, he's gay, you know? Might as well just say it, Al. I mean, fuck. Like, I mean, he's so blatant with it. It's ridiculous.
When he gets you from behind, he really knows how to take over.
He loves to fuck Pat Patterson in the locker room. It's like, just fucking say it. What you want to say, Al? I mean, Christ.
Oh, God.
He's basically saying it. I mean, just Jesus. Yeah. Just go I ahead, mean, Al. It's like Austin Powers when he's trying not to say mole. You know what I mean? It's just say it. Gawk,
guacamole.
You know? Just fucking say it.
I mean, it's fucking ludicrous. Yeah. We get it, guys. All right. You're either really that bored. I mean, Jesus, get out of high school. I do like, once the match settled in, though, I gave it a star, by the way. I will say this. I did like how they did kind of get into the whole thing of Lombardi not being able to finish off. And I'm sure this was real commentary, not more innuendo, but how he couldn't finish Brady Boone off. And every time he tried to, he'd hit a great move. And then instead of going for a pin, he'd try some other crap move. And eventually Brady Boone caught up and got the win. So I did like the commentary after they got rid of all the juvenile nonsense. They did kind of settle in and really tell a decent story. The match wasn't horrible. It didn't need to be 15 minutes, but it wasn't unwatchable. At least the commentary kind of helped tell the story that Lombardi probably should have won the match like four times. Otherwise, Kel, I mean, it's a long opener. I don't know if they were pushing Brady Boone for other things or if this was just something to get the crowd going to start and expect it to be that long. But I don't know. I other than the you know, terrible innuendo and the out of nowhere finish, I mean, the match probably could have been about 3 minutes shorter.
Oh, at least maybe like 8 minutes shorter.
13 minutes shorter for sure.
Yeah, that would have been perfectly fine. A nice squash by Boone on Lombardi.
Yeah.
When I saw the names come up, and I went into this show pretty much cold other than knowing the main event and maybe one or two other matches. Oh, dear. This is my punishment, I guess, for missing so many bad shows. yeah, I mean, yeah, like you said, J.R. Boone looks great. Great body. He's too short, though. He's your typical, you know, great look, but too short guy like Rick McGraw. That just, there's a, you know, a level to him. He won't go past that. And yeah, all the jokes. It's funny, when you're a kid and watching these shows, you never realize what they're talking about, you know, with the innuendo and stuff. But now, this one was one of the more blatant ones that I can recall. So that entertained me. And I noticed, I've missed a few shows, obviously. I've noticed the crowd at MSG is a bit different now. Mm-hmm. They're not so quick to turn on a match and initiate the boring chants as they were back in 85 and 86. You know, some of those shows, the first match, within seconds, there was boring chants. This one, the crowd eventually tires of it, but it just, that's because it goes way too long and there's a long headlock spot. And a lot of kids now in the crowd, obviously. Yeah. That wasn't so much the case in 85, 86. 85, 86 was more still the real hardcores and more of the snarky, like, teenagers or guys in their 20s and stuff that probably read the sheets. But now it's definitely more of your typical late 80s WWF family-friendly crowd, so it's definitely different. Yeah, just not a very interesting match. Who cares about Lombardi? You know, and he's in control the whole way. Boone, his offense wasn't too great. That SD Jones memorial mischarge into the corner looked pretty bad. There was just a lot of clunky spots. But it actually had a finish. I was expecting a 20-minute draw. You know, I don't know why they had to go 15 minutes to a finish, but whatever. We at least got a finish and a clean finish. The German suplex by Boone looked all right, and mm-hmm. not too many guys in the WWF were doing German suplexes at the time. So that saved it for me from being a dud. I went a half star on it. At least it wasn't a 20-minute draw. And that was about all I have to say about that. Mm.
He finished on his back. Penis! Yeah, it is what it is. All right. I think your point, too, about the crowd's interesting, Kelly, because they have been a little bit more loving and lively as well.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, I think it does have to do with kind of the Hogan era really ushering in these fans now, as we're starting to see some of the turnover in the crowd to that more family and younger, more accepting crowd that's just there for the stars versus more the action. So, all right, next up, interesting match here, is our boy, old Creamy Legs himself, Kenny Patera, taking on the Canadian strongman Dino Bravo. Gorilla says this is a developing vendetta. Al says Ken is offended by Dino Bravo's claims of being the world's strongest man. Dino chugs out sans Frenchie Martin, very thankfully tonight. Nice little pop for Patera, who jogs out all focused. Bravo rants on the mic about his record, but the crowd drowns him out. Bravo then challenges Kenny to an arm wrestling match. Patera accepts. Fink comes in and calls for a mic and asks for a table, which arrives in a setup. We get the usual stalling and feeling out, and they finally lock hands and get going. They're even for a bit and then edge back and forth as Bravo makes some really absurd faces throughout the whole thing. Patera eventually wins and celebrates, and Bravo says he cheated because he was pushing against the side of the table to move it. Fink says that Bravo wants another shot, and Ken obliges. They lock back up, but this time Bravo just cracks Ken with a punch and then kicks and clubs away before smashing him at the table. Chief Jay and Arnold Scollin lumber out and come out to help Ken. Gorilla says the chief has gotten pretty fat, basically. He says he's put on a lot of weight. Fink announces that the doctors rule Patera out for tonight and that Bravo wins their match by forfeit, which he celebrates heartily, which is always fun. This was pretty fun. It's better than any match they would have had, so I'm here for it. They also didn't drag it out either, which helped. They just got to the point and kept moving. So obviously, I mean, no grade here. It's a fun little segment. I'm glad they went the route they did, and I enjoyed it. What did you think, Kel?
Yeah, because like I said, I didn't look ahead into the results, so I just assumed, oh, we're going to get a match between these two guys, and I definitely wasn't looking forward to that, considering the state of both wrestlers at this point in time. But yeah, an out-of-nowhere arm wrestling challenge, that wasn't too bad. It was probably for the best that they didn't have a match, because Bravo was pretty much blown up after delivering that promo.
And then all those facial expressions really took it out of him during the arm wrestling contest.
Yeah, the facial expressions. He was just gassed after that. Yeah, two takes at this. And then, yeah, your typical finish to an arm wrestling challenge. I don't think any arm wrestling challenge in wrestling history has ever ended without the table getting smashed or a chair over somebody or whatever.
Even Sonny and Sable, I think, did one where the table got flipped over.
Yeah. But then the highlight, of course, for me was Strongbow and the Golden Boy, Arnold Skaland, making a random appearance.
Getting called fat.
Yeah, Gorilla would always do that. You know, at least at this time, he would always point out how Strongbow would always.
Into the 90s, he does it to Patterson.
Oh, yeah.
That infamous match in 93. Is that Pat Patterson? Yeah. Boy, he's gotten fat. You know,
where did he get fat?
Yeah, he keeps it going.
But Strongbow did legit put on like 100 pounds after he retired.
Yeah.
And Skaland was starting to show his age, that's for sure. Yeah, like you said, JR, probably a lot better than what a match would have been between the two of them, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. What do you think,
Scott? I concur with you, JR, that this was probably better off being a match, being whatever this was and not a match. I honestly didn't realize that Patera was still doing. I mean, I know he's at SummerSlam 88, but I figured he was hidden from everything else before that. But, I mean, obviously Bravo is the hotter guy in that aspect. But, yeah, they were better off just doing this than falling around the ring for 14 minutes of shit. So, good to keep Bravo strong and, you know, I guess protect Patera, I suppose, for some reason or another. But yeah, I mean, we haven't had a segment like that in a while at the Garden, so kind of got the crowd a little, you know, something different to look at. And again, it was probably better than a match. So, an expert booking decision by Fat Jay Strongbow and yes. Decrepit Arnie Skaland or whatever to do what they did. So, let us move on to a match that was definitely better than this would have been. So,
yeah, and this one kind of starts our trend now of this being a WrestleMania 4. It's like the backlash of the day, right? A lot of rematches, and that's Bret Hart taking on Bad News Brown. So, of course, this stemmed from WrestleMania 4 when they both looked like they were going to win the Battle Royal, and Bad News turned on Bret, made him look like a bitch. And here we are. So, interesting solo spot for the Hitman. Brown jumps on Hart as he gets in and starts to go to work as Gorilla talks about their issues at Mania. Brown clubs away, but Bret hip tosses and slams him. Gorilla says Bret cares more about his sunglasses than being prepared. Bret knocks Brown to the floor where he threatens to leave, but he returns and catches Bret with a kick to the gut. Bret comes back again, eventually dumps Brown to the floor with a backdrop and then slingshots and peppers him. Gorilla says Bad News looks lethargic out there. Bret eats a big boot on a charge. Brown goes up top, but Bret slams him and hits an atomic drop, a leg drop, and an elbow off the middle rope. Brown blocks a backbreaker with a thumb to the eye and starts to slug and choke and hammer away with his basic hard strikes. Brown dumps Hart outside and heads out and rams him back first into the post. Bret climbs back up, but Brown clubs away at his chest before whipping him hard chest first to the buckle. Brown tries another whip, but Bret reverses it. Excuse me. Bret goes to the second rope, but whiffs on an elbow, and Brown stomps and headbutts away as Bret just crumbles to the mat. Brown tries some lazy covers, which Gorilla and Al rip him for. Brown then whiffs on a dive to the middle off the middle rope, and Bret starts to punch away with aggression and gets two on a backbreaker. Bret chucks Brown out and follows him to the ground, follows up to slam him on the ground. Bret suplexes Brown back in and goes for the pin where he can. Bret misses on another second rope elbow as the match edges on. Bret comes back with a monkey flip for two. Brown backdrops him to the floor and then follows Bret backdrops him in and they head back inside. Bret spikes Brown with a tight pile driver, but the ref doesn't count as Gorilla says the bell rang even though it didn't. And then we find out the match was a draw. Bret punches away at Brown some more. And I actually like this. I thought it was really fun. It was good structure. I thought the work and heat was strong. I thought Bret really aced his opportunity as a singles de facto face in this role. I thought he worked well with the selling and the comebacks. And it's kind of a little gem here, even with the finish. It was long, but it never felt too long, like even though it was drawn out to meet the limit. Like we never had that stretch of, oh, this is definitely a draw. At least I didn't feel it. I thought they made it to 20 minutes organically. So I actually went 3 stars on this, Scott. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good litmus test for Bret, and Brown was a good foil for him. So I dug this one.
I did as well. I actually gave it 3.5. I liked it a lot. The actual time, anytime that there's a draw and Graham doesn't have the actual time, I'll time it on my phone and see. And it was actually only 18.5 minutes. So they actually fell short by 90 seconds of the full 20. Yeah, so there you go. So the reason it felt short is because it was. But I thought the match was great. Obviously, you saw very early on by 88. That Bret was the one that they were looking ahead to be a solo star. This was the first taste of it. And I think it was a good example. And Bad News Brown, I have a feeling we're going to see throughout the next couple of years that he's with the company, that here's a guy who, and we've talked about this with other guys, Hogan actually one of them, where on pay-per-view and, you know, TV, like Saturday Night's Main Event or something, you're going to get like 5 minutes and it's a lot of posturing and bullshit. Mm-hmm. But at a house show where you can get 8, 10, 12, 14, 16 minutes, and in this case, close to 20, 18 and a half, that you really get to see that these guys are actually pretty decent wrestlers. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where Bad News Brown really gets a good showing here. I thought he did an exceptional match with Brett. Obviously, Brett nowhere near what he would be, you know, 3 years down the road. But, you know, here was a guy who wrestled solo young in his career with the old man in Stampede. So he obviously knew what he was doing. And I just thought it was really good. Plus, you're talking about another guy who was trained. You got two Stu disciples, you know, that both were trained in Aaron George's basement. And you could see that very fluid in the ring together because they both came from the same mold, if you will. I had no problem with the draw, and I like the after stuff. It was just good back and forth storytelling. And the crowd was really into it, and I think, Kel, that your theory about the crowd it holds true here as well. I think the crowd was really into it, and Brett showed his mettle, and Bad News showed that he was more than just, you know, a couple of punches and a ghetto blaster.
Just a pretty face.
Not just a pretty face. Let me tell you something here in Harlem. Now, Kel, you obviously saw Bad News, you know, on some of the earlier shows in your Titan days, and I've actually seen him a couple of times on some of these mid to late 79 All-Stars that are on the network.
Mm-hmm.
By 80, I think he was already. Did he go to Stampede by 80? Or maybe he went to Florida?
I think he got to Stampede around 82-ish, I want to say.
Okay. Because I saw him, he was on for like 3 straight weeks in, say, like October 79 on the All-Stars. And I'm into January of 80, and I haven't seen him in a couple months. So I don't know if he had left or if they just weren't pushing him anymore or whatever. But no, I thought it was a great match, good back and forth, good storytelling, crowd was into it. After the non-match we just had, which was a blessing in disguise, we could have had a nice, good, meaty match here, and it worked out well.
Yeah, this was a pretty hot Stampede feud around 1983 between these two guys, when Brown was, of course, Bad News Allen. And, hey, it's Bret Hart's birthday today, actually, so happy birthday.
There you go.
Hitman.
Hope you have a 4 out of 10 day.
I'd never seen this match before, so that was neat. It's got to be one of the longer matches Brown ever wrestled in the WWF. His matches were usually short, and
it might be his best match. Well, we haven't seen some of the Savage stuff, I guess, but it's probably up there as one of his best matches.
When he gets in with Savage and Hogan, it's very heated, and those are very very good matches, from what I recall. This one, I liked it not as much as you guys. I thought maybe it was a bit too long, and the crowd was into it, but not at the level of some of the other matches. I mean, Brett had just gone singles here. I don't think the crowd really knew how to take him yet. I'm not sure how he was really presented on TV after the babyface turn. I can't remember if he was prominently featured or not, but Brown was definitely someone they had plans for. Definitely fast paced right before the bell, or right as the bell, well, before the bell, Brown attacks hard, and then you're off to the races. But I think the length hurt this match a bit. It just didn't need to be that long. Could have been a bit more heated, since this was building off a big angle at WrestleMania. But the finish was cool, because that really got the crowd into it with the pile driver reversal by Hart on the floor. And then he takes Bad News into the ring and sets him up for a pile driver and gets a big pop for that. And they timed it well with the bell ringing there. Yeah, it didn't feel like a 20-minute draw, that's for sure. And yes, it wasn't. But it didn't feel as long as the Boone-Lombardi match.
No, definitely not. I mean, yeah. If you had to guess which one was longer, I would have guessed probably the Boone one.
Yeah. So, it was good. I went 2.5 stars. I was, maybe expecting a bit more. And we'll see how this goes going forward. But, good match.
No, it's a good note, too, that, you know, if you get the chemistry from Stampede. So, obviously, mm-hmm. it was a good choice if you're trying to showcase Brett in a singles role, put him with a guy he's super comfortable with, or at least, you know, had success with in the past. So, it was a smart booking there.
Yeah. I think, I mean, they had big plans for Bad News. I think Brett was more, I think he was more used almost as fodder to get Brett Bad News over, as we'll see. I mean, not to go too deep into it, but... You know, the singles push doesn't really last too long for Brett.
No, but I do think they were probably testing a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, they do it a few times, right? So, I mean, it's something like that had something there, right, that they were looking at to see. Because why? I mean, there's a million guys they could have picked to help Bad News. I mean, there had to be some reason why they chose him, too. So.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. All right, we go back to our WrestleMania 4 rematch pool here with our next one. That's Bam Bam Bigelow taking on the one-man gang, Big Hoss rematch. Of course, the tournament bout was really disappointing. We had mentioned Bigelow's knee injury. We got the weird finish and just really kind of was one of the worst matches of the night. Gorilla and Al discuss the various hair situations in this match as we get underway. Gorilla also notes that Slick is missing in action tonight. The two bulls lock up and push around the ring until Bigelow works a headlock. Bammer starts to work the arm as Gorilla says Slick not being here is affecting the gang. Gang eventually turns the tide by sitting down hard on Bigelow's chest, and that got a big ooh from the crowd in a fun spot. Gang uses his weight to batter Bammer and then works a nerve hold for a bit. Bigelow fights to his feet and starts to unload with strikes before hitting a real nice leaping clothesline. Bigelow lunges, but Gang sidesteps him and Bigelow takes a wild bump through the ropes to the floor. Gang meets him outside at the ropes and Bigelow bashes him into the buckle, but the ref keeps counting and basically, like WrestleMania 4, counts Bammer out. Lame finish to a pretty fun big man clash. Bigelow gets a hot attack after the bell and slams Gang to a huge pop. I thought this was better than WrestleMania 4, even with the dumb finish, as they try to protect both guys. Bigelow showed some great agility here and energy, and Gang hung with him. I just wish they had a better structure late. I was on the fence, star and a half. I'm going to go a star just because of the finish, but I thought they worked real hard, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I went star as well. The finish was horrible. But the crowd was hot for this. I mean, this was a relatively big-time match for the time. And Bigelow was over big time still, even though the booking had sort of turned on him. They were definitely behind him. But, yeah, we didn't have much action here after the beginning. You know, Bigelow works on the arm, and then we get the nerve hold. And just a brief comeback by Bigelow before he's thrown out of the ring. And just the match was stopped. Why? Because he went a little too far with the head ramming into the turnbuckle. I don't know. It was those kind of finishes where you don't know what the finish is. You those are never good. So yeah, one star and oof, too bad about these guys because they should have had better matches. That's for sure.
You know what's interesting to me too is the crowd since like mid 87 or so have really been into like these Haas battles. Like anytime we get like two real big fat guys, I feel like the crowd is like real into it. Like we saw with some of the Bundy, Bigelow and Bundy, and like, you know, all these big guys when they go in it, like they're really into like the, you know, ooh and ah aspect of it. And you get that here too. And it's too bad they didn't deliver better finishes because we've had like Bigelow's had some real good just big man battles on these shows. And here it's like, oh, you see some of the stuff he's doing. It's just, you just wish he had his head a little bit fixed on better. And maybe we would have gotten just a little bit more out of him. But, yeah, it's sad to see, you know, how he goes down in these last couple of matches here, WrestleMania now here.
Mm-hmm.
But he's around until – when's his last – God, they're subbing for him. He must have been advertised pretty far. Okay, so he's here till July. But they were subbing him out until, like, almost September. So he must have been advertised a decent amount. I thought he was gone a little bit sooner, but –
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so did I. I think, I mean, the knee thing was, I think, an issue
for
the rest of his run, pretty much.
We'll see him once more here at MSG, so we'll talk about him again. But
your official match, I was hoping, like the crowd and like you guys, I was kind of hoping for something good here. Again, another case where maybe with a little, believe it or not, with a little more time from two big guys, we can get a little bit of more storytelling. But it's obvious that... that Bigelow was on the shit list. This match should have been much better than it was. It's a shame that it wasn't. But one man gang, there's only so much you could do. I mean, you know, it's not like he's not Bundy. I'll tell you that. I think Bundy is like the template for the great fat guy wrestler. And and we saw that a lot on our shows here, that Bundy was a lot more mobile and more, you know, spry for a guy his size than most other big dudes. And I think we were trying to expect at least that out of Bigelow, and it just wasn't there. And it's unfortunate. But, you know, when you're on the shit list, you're not going to get your way anyway. So, and the gang just doesn't have that. It just doesn't have that mobility and never would. So I gave it a star as well. And, I mean, gang still staying strong for what I don't know. He already got his, you know, title match with Hogan. So I don't know where he was going from here, but particularly with a heel IC champ, et cetera. So I don't know why he didn't just pin Bigelow clean.
Yeah.
But strange ending. And even with an extra, what, like 4 minutes than they had at WrestleMania, it still wasn't great storytelling.
It was better than Mania. I mean, they at least had some energy. Mania just felt like, all right, here's your 2 minutes. Go out there and fill some time. Like here, at least they feel like they had some structure. But the finish just really ruined it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it did. It did. And so there you go. So another Bigelow burial in 9 minutes and 12 seconds.
Hmm. All right, let's get to our mid-show, full show main event, but mid-show kind of anchor match, and that is our WWF World Championship match, as our brand new World Heavyweight Champion Macho Man Randy Savage has his first MSG title defense in another WrestleMania 4 rematch against the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase. DiBiase and Virgil showered in booze as he remains the top contender. Savage is out next with Liz to a huge pop and the first non-Hulk champion we've seen on this show in MSG. So, here we go. Al puts over Ted's skill as Savage stalks Virgil outside, allowing Ted to clobber him from behind and get to work. Savage posts Ted and recovers before unloading the challenger in and out of the ring. The crowd is bananas as Savage is working the arm relentlessly. Al's surprised at how animated Virgil is tonight as his boss is getting demolished by the champ. Ted goes to the eyes, but Savage fights through it and keeps kicking away until Ted slings him to the floor. Ted fetches him and starts to work his strike offense, and he nabs a near fall as Liz roots on her man. Ted cuts off a few comebacks and keeps running through the offense, including a tight chin lock. Virgil's really vocal at ringside, cheering on Ted and berating the ref. Savage breaks the chin lock, but Ted maintains control until he whiffs on a back elbow drop off the middle rope. Things pick up, but the ref gets wiped out by accident. Savage heads up top, but Virgil trips him up, knocks him to the floor in a nasty bump, and the ref recovers and counts out Savage, giving DiBiase the win, but not the title. Savage chases off Ted and takes back his belt, which Ted tried to steal. Again, really fun here. Well executed with good selling, offense, and pacing by both. After Savage worked his ass off, DiBiase was sharp and on point and gets a big win to stay in contention. And I actually like this a little bit better than Mania and Saturday Night's Main Event of the three we've seen so far. And it's interesting, and I get why they did it, because they're trying to keep the feud hot. We have Savage lose his inaugural title defense at MSG. So in addition to talking about the match, guys, I'm curious your thoughts on Savage, how he's presented here. Is that, like, you know, is it a guy that needed a win of some sort, or maybe like a double DQ versus actually losing the match, which I went 3.5 stars on, Scott?
I went 3.5 as well. Graham had around 12 minutes. I had kind of did an impromptu, kind of an unofficial time. It was like 12:08, 12:09. Obviously, we're going to throw this date out, and Mr. Nelson knows this date very well. December 26th, 1983. You know that date, Mr. Nelson, and of course, JR. That was the last time we had an MSG world title match that did not have Hulk Hogan in it. Mm. Of course, that was the night that Bob Backlund lost the world title to Sheiky Baby. And of course, every title match since then had the big guy in it, but not this evening. We'll get into my rant on the ending, because I'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
The match was tremendous. I think everybody knew these two, given without the ancillary nonsense, without Hogan, without Liz. Well, I shouldn't say without Liz, but right. Liz just being there, without Hogan, no Andre, just let the two go at it. You were going to get a great match. I don't think there was any doubt you were going to get a great match from these two guys if you just let them go.
Mm-hmm.
And Savage is over. There's no doubt about that. The crowd pretty much shows that the crowd is into him as champion. I don't think there's any doubt. I don't think, you know, we had like, you know, interesting discussions over the last two episodes about, you know, are fans like, you know, betraying Hogan by actually cheering Savage, and is it okay to cheer him? Well, obvious here it is. And I thought the match was really good. And I think we all knew it was going to be really good. But I know he's not Hulk Hogan. We get that. No one is. How do you not have him win this match in some capacity? All right, pinning DiBiase. All right, maybe you wanted to hold off on that. That's fine. But what the fuck? He's your world champion. He's been champion for barely 4 weeks, and he loses by DQ or loses by countout? What kind of asshole decision's that? It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. You got to get this guy over. You got to keep getting him over. It's one thing to be over as just a good babyface. It's another thing to be over as the face of the company right now. So whoever made up that decision, whether it was fat fucking Jay or whoever the hell made that decision, should, you know, get their Shoney's or fucking Golden Corral privileges stripped. Because that's bullshit. That's a bullshit decision right there. This guy's your fucking world champion. You got to get him over and you got to get him winning. Pins are fans that have been going to MSG house shows know that 90% of the time you're not going to get a pinfall win at a in a title match in either way. Most of the time.
Well, you know? Not at least until the feuds. And like, I mean, not the first match between the two. You're not getting it.
Exactly. And this is just outrageous that this guy does not get the win here in some capacity. It's outrageous, Kel, why you do not get this guy the win. Stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. How does this guy not get the win in some capacity? He's your world champion. He's red hot. He's a month old as champ. You need to give this guy a legit victory, and instead you do some flim-flam fuck show finish, and he looks like – I don't want to say he looks like a putz, but for your first big title defense at the Garden, this is not what you should have – he should have had to walk into. Terrible booking decision at the end here. The match, outstanding. 3.5 stars, two great guys. You knew that they were going to put on a fantastic match given the time and the lack of, you know, ancillary nonsense that a pay-per-view match would give you. But to have this guy not win is utterly, utterly ludicrous.
Well, no, I have to disagree there, Scott. This is like your traditional booking for a three-match series, not to spoil the future, but you know, the champion is gonna probably lose the first match in the three-match series to build to the ultimate climax where he wins. So I'm totally fine with that. Savage was already super over. I mean, the crowd heat for this was huge, almost Hogan levels at times in the match. And as you were talking, I got interested to see how previous champions in their first defenses at MSG went. Hogan's was in February 1984 against Paul Orndorff, and he won, but only by countout. So he didn't get a dominant win. And Bob Backlund in 1978 lost to superstar Billy Graham when the match was stopped due to cuts over the champion's eye. So there is precedent for Savage's booking in this match. Yeah, I mean, I loved the match so much. I wasn't disappointed in the finish at all. It's actually a perfect finish to set up rematches, and so I'll go give you the whole review. Liz looked absolutely stunning here, and yeah, I miss her so much. It just reminds me every time I see her in these matches, and yeah, what a hot crowd, you know, Savage. Super popular. You know, the whole thing got over. The tournament, Savage becoming the champion. DiBiase as the top heel is super over. And yeah, this is going to be a hot one going forward. And Savage's selling was so good in this match. During the heat, just really, really good. Top-notch stuff. Savage got crotched on the top rope, which was pretty hardcore for 1988. So a good out for him to lose this match. And the heat at the end. I mean, you have to consider the build and booking for the future and wanting to draw more money. And I bet, I don't know exactly the attendance for the next show, but I would think it would improve on this one. This one is 17,000 for MSG, so not a sellout. And with that finish, yeah, I think, you know, the fans want to see Savage come back and kick DiBiase's ass and maybe even kick Virgil's ass too, because, yeah, it was a cheap finish. Savage got screwed big time. And, yeah, 3.5 stars, just like you guys. And I hadn't seen this one in years, so it was really fresh. And that's the other thing with Savage is he's fresh now. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, they've had Hogan on top for a long time, but Savage now is the champion. That's new. That's different. That's cool. And so, yeah, I totally understand the booking. I don't think it makes him look weak. DiBiase is, you know, the top heel in the company, and you're building to a 3-match program, so you gotta can't have Savage win the first one, even, you know, maybe by DQ, but does that really change things or improve things? You got to keep DiBiase undefeated until the final match. So, yeah, I'm fine with that.
I think I'm somewhere in between. like, I get the setup for the future ones. I feel like DiBiase's, I mean, I guess you could argue this counter for Savage, but I feel like DiBiase's already strong enough. What I would have done is had Savage hit the elbow, Virgil goes to stalk Liz, Savage comes out, and then, like, pulls Virgil in the ring. Whatever, some kind of, like, DQ that way. I just feel like the L is what is like, just a bit much. And maybe if you wanted to, like, you could have maybe given Savage a gang here and let him get a win or something. You know what I mean? And then started the DiBiase stuff.
I agree.
Make DiBiase earn, like, his match again. And then start the 3-match feud. It just, like, to me, there's a difference between Hogan and 84 and Savage here. I mean, Hogan was a force in nature.
I agree.
Came in red hot. Savage has really been second fiddle, and Hogan's been so dominant on top of 4.5 years. Like, it's kind of a road to hoe to get Savage to that level right now. Like, and I know the fans have loved him, and he's done all this, but he's still a little bit in Hogan's shadow. He needed Hogan to help him win at WrestleMania. And now it looks like, all right, without Hogan to save him, he's getting countered out. You know, we saw him get fucked by Honky a bunch at MSG before this. It's like, so, yeah, I think in a vacuum, you know, when you're thinking, oh, 3-match series, it's fine. I just feel like in this one particular situation, he could have used, like, an establishing win. And, you know, we'll see, because he's going to have a match on Saturday's main event on national TV, so we'll see how that goes. But I think here, feed him someone else or have him, like, just have it be a DQ or they brawl on the floor. It's something like that where you can still do a fucky finish, but it's not DiBiase getting his hand raised and Savage taking the L in his first match without Hogan getting his back. You know what I mean? Like, I just think that part of it is what gives me pause. Like, I think normally I'd agree with your point, Kelly. That's just what kind of stops me.
Yeah. Sorry, Kelly.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, the crowds in the Northeast are kind of conditioned to treat losses by count out and DQ and blood stoppages as meaningless. I mean, they used that finish so much with Bruno, with Backlund, with Hogan to prolong things. It was a booking crutch. So I don't think too many fans like thought too much about it at the time.
No,
you know,
we're
just
definitely
okay.
Overanalyzing, but that's what we do.
Yeah. Always. Yeah. Of course.
I have to say though, yeah. if I may, maybe it's funny that you bring up the Backlund example, Kel, because obviously that was a big deal because after a year of a – here was the difference. I mean, there he was replacing a heel, so I think it wasn't like he was replacing Bruno directly. So,
right, and he had defeated Superstar Graham for the title. So
exactly. It was a straight-up title win. It wasn't a vacancy. The landscape is not the same as it is in any other circumstance. That's why, and I agree with JR's point on that. This isn't some guy who just won the title and now we have to start a fresh feud. I agree with JR. Maybe he shouldn't have fought DiBiase tonight. Maybe you give him a strong win against some maybe you put Greg Valentine here. The Hammer's not wrestling Steamboat. Put the Hammer here. Get a.
I think Gang was the choice. I mean, he's fighting him on TV on Saturday's main event. They fought at Mania to kind of a shit finish. Like, I think maybe it put DiBiase over Bigelow and let him kind of get a win to set up. And now have him challenge Savage tonight. You know, I deserve a shot. You fucked me over. And then have Savage beat Gang clean here. and get his win. And now, you know, now he's got a win under his belt. He'll fight him on Sinus main event, and then in May he's ready for three matches at DiBiase. I mean, slight tweak, but maybe it just gets him off a little bit stronger.
Right. And another thing to consider is, unlike Bruno, Hogan, and Backlund, where their reigns were wide open.
Right.
Savage is, you know, it's closed. There's an end date, even in April 1988. So they're not thinking about how to present him to maximize him for the longest possible title, right? So that may have, you know, played a thought into the booking a bit too.
Maybe. I mean, are we already using the, oh, we can't win without Hogan excuse after 4 weeks?
No. I think what Kelly's point is that there's, you know,
there's
not
an end date to Savage's run already.
Oh, I agree. Absolutely.
April 1988 in place, essentially.
Yeah.
Right.
So are you saying they don't have to get him over as much, basically? I mean, they want him over, but they're not building him as the stud for the future. Is that kind of what you mean?
Yeah, there's someone that won't have to carry the territory for conceivably years and years.
Right. Because, I mean, they really only did this because Hogan was doing the movie, right? I mean, it's, and for the story, I guess, to mix it up a bit.
Yeah, more or less, yeah.
All right, why don't we take a break? About halfway through the show, we'll come back, we'll do our pop culture report, and we'll finish off. It's actually been a pretty spirited show so far. You know, this is a little spotty on paper, but there's some interesting through lines that we'll talk about at the end. So we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll finish things up. That's the way it began. We were hand in hand. Glenn Miller's band was better than before. We yelled and screamed.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place for Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceForNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaceFanation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceFanation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceFanation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is the King of the Mountain, Jeff Jarrett, the founder and president of Global Force Wrestling, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
Our nation, we are back taking a look at the April 1988 Madison Square Garden house show, and it's been an interesting time in the world of basketball, Scott, because your team, the Los Angeles Lakers, have picked up one of the all-time greats. It's just a dream not that long ago, and you said, LeBron James, get out of my dreams and into my car, right to Los Angeles, because that is the number one song in the country tonight, get out of my dreams, get into my car. By the one and only Billy Ocean, and that will transition us to the biggest lapdog of the king that will now exist, Scott Criscolo's Pop Culture Corner.
JR, I hate to say this to you, but that is not the number one song.
I'm just going by my spreadsheet here.
All right. I mentioned it to you off air, but that's what song it was.
Look, I just read what's on the prompter. It's fine. It's fine. You want to break my heart? Tell me I'm wrong. You can tell me where my broken heart could go. And according to you, that is the number one song, I guess, Whitney Houston.
By the way, both weeks, the beginning and the end. Anyway,
there you go.
There's a lot of dreams and broken hearts in the
Well, make sure
there.
You fix this for next week, then. What's your next week's pick for Saturday's main event?
Saturday's main event, it's actually the same song. So
okay. Maybe that's why Green maybe put the number two to mix it up. Sometimes he did that.
Yes,
he did. I don't know. Go to ask him. Ask him after. All right.
Okay, so number one is Whitney, our girl, with Where Do Broken Hearts Go? And the Broken Hearts, I don't even think they're in Cleveland. They got their ring. They don't give a shit anymore. But Whitney is your number one. Number two, Little Devil Inside, which many people think Boogie Cousins is the devil inside after he just signed the gimme deal with Golden State.
Steve Lombardi is the devil inside Pat Patterson. Because they're gay.
Get out of my dreams. Get into Pat Patterson. No, I'm only kidding. Get Into My Car, Billy Ocean, number three. Wishing Well.
Ooh, good song.
Darby song.
And I'm Wishing Well.
Huh. Girlfriend
by
Pebbles.
That's a great song.
Yes, it is. Girlfriend by Pebbles, also a great song at number five.
That Terrence Trent D'Arby song, we were doing trivia one night at Boneheads, and they played that song. And, like, it's not one you immediately think of and know it right away. And I remember a friend, Becky, like, was like, wait, I know it. Terrence Trent D'Arby. It's like, where the fuck did you pull that out from? But now it's like, you know, it's just, so I always, you know, it's kind of become like, I'll post it on our Facebook page every now and then. It's kind of become a little iconic song for us. But no, that's a good one, Wishing Well.
Yes. That is number four. Girlfriend by Pebbles at number five. One of my favorite songs that I never get to hear live because they don't play it anymore live, Aerosmith with Angel from Permanent Vacation is at number six. Tiffany, I Saw Him Standing There at number seven. Gloria Estefan and the Miami Sound Machine at number eight. With Anything for You. Number nine, Pink Cadillac by Natalie Cole. And number 10, Prove Your Love by Taylor Dayne. Not a bad top 10 there of some epic 80s divas. But number one is the top diva of the moment, Whitney Houston, and Where Do Broken Hearts Go? Apparently to Cleveland. Let's go to the theater, JR. Mm-hmm. And what movies came out 2 days before on the 23rd? The first one is apparently the autobiography of Steve Lombardi. It's called Casual Sex. Narrated by Lord Alfred.
Yes. The Terry Govan School of Self-Defense, where they have casual sex and watch it every week. Okay, hang on. Sorry. It accidentally took me to booty call disambiguation on the Wikipedia page. So the film, see casual sex? Question mark? Okay. Stacy.
The Ring Crew.
Stacy has a promiscuous past and is learning of the AIDS epidemic. She wants to find a guy whom she knows is clean. She convinces her childhood friend Melissa to go to a health spa or resort for singles so they can help each other find the man of their dreams. As a concierge gift, they receive a basket full of condoms. At the spa, Stacy meets Nick, a struggling musician for who she is taken with, and also encounters Vinny, aka the Vin Man, an annoying Italian-American man from New Jersey who she tries to avoid. I don't think I've ever seen this movie or heard of it, honestly. Starring Leah Thompson as Stacy, Victoria Jackson as Melissa, Andrew Dice Clay as the Vin Man, Stephen Shellen as Nick. So there you go. Have you seen this one, Kelly?
Yeah, years ago.
Yep. Is it as hot as they make it sound?
Oh, it's plenty hot, yeah.
Okay. Sounds
they're
like
both hot. Leah Thompson and, well, Leah Thompson and Victoria Jackson were both in their prime hotness phase. And, of course, Dice was just getting to that point when he was he was getting pretty red hot. So
may have to have Jennifer and Tim review this one on Talking Pop. Seems like it's a good fit.
I think they would. I think they'd enjoy it very much. I had to tell Jen that it will not be on Shudder because it may sound like a horror movie, but it's really not. Speaking of horror movies, JR, we have a great remake. Actually, it's not a remake; it's a sequel of an epic horror movie right here. This one, I think Jen should do. Return of the Killer Tomatoes. Not Attack, but Return of the Killer Tomatoes.
Okay, let's pull that up. Set 10 years after the events of Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. The United States is once again safe, and tomatoes have been outlawed. Wilbur Finletter has been praised as a hero of the Great Tomato War and parlayed his fame into the opening Finletter's Pizzeria, which serves tomatoless pizzas. Working for Wilbur is his nephew Chad Finletter, who was a delivery boy. Also with Chad is his roommate Matt Stevens, a suave ladies' man. Starring Anthony Stark as Chad Finister, Finletter, I should say. George Clooney as Matt Stevens, Stephen Lundquist, John Astin, Charlie Jones... about it.
This has to be like one of the first things George Clooney ever did.
Yeah, I think so.
Post Facts of Life.
Return of the Killer Tomatoes.
Even though they said 10 years after, meanwhile the movie came out like in 1960, I think, or something. But anyway. All right, and the third movie. I believe we have another horror movie here. Let's see. Yes, another horror movie. It is called The Unholy.
I don't like the movies this week. All right. Too scary for me. While praying in St. Agnes Church in New Orleans, Father Dennis is confronted by a demon taking a shape of a seductive woman. The woman tears his throat open, killing him. Several years later, at a New Orleans hotel, Father Michael's called to talk to a man named Claude, who's threatening to jump from the top floor of the building. When he offers Claude a cigarette, Michael is pulled out of the window and falls to the ground. Inexplicably, he survives the fall without injury. After the incident, Michael's appointed to the St. Agnes Parish by Archbishop Moseley. The parish had been closed after Father Dennis's unsolved murder. Starring Ben Cross, Ned Beatty, William Russ, Hal Holbrook, Peter Frechette. That's about it.
Several years later, at a New Orleans hotel, a demon is accosted by Nick Duke trying to look for his bag of WrestleMania trinkets.
There you go.
Although he's
before we went there.
Although he's accosted by Sheriff Pete going after the barbecue. Mm-hmm. Sheriff Pete in a New Orleans horror movie. I think it works perfectly.
There you go.
All right. The 1988 baseball season, gentlemen, has begun. Of course, your defending world champions are the Minnesota Twins, who, of course, beat the Cardinals in last year's World Series. Only one game on this Monday. It was in Milwaukee when the Brewers were still in the American League. The Red Sox, 5-10 winners over the Brew Crew. The standings right now. Cleveland leads the AL East at 14-4. The Yankees are 13-5. Your Blue Jays, Mr. Nelson, are
shitter.
They're 9-8. They're actually 9-8. This was the year that Mr. Winston, but this is the year that the Orioles got off to that horrendous start. They are 0-18.
This history is repeating itself. This
Toronto sucks. Baltimore sucks. Yep. All the sucks.
Yeah, pretty much. I think the Jays finished probably with 86, 87 wins. That year, but still not a factor.
In the AL West, Oakland leads at 12-7. Of course, the A's beginning their big run. Pittsburgh leads the NL East at 13-4. The Mets are 11-6 in second place, and the Dodgers are 11-4, and they lead the National League West. The NBA playoffs are in an off day. They actually haven't started yet. The regular season had ended. Here are your playoff matchups. The number one overall seed is and the number one seed in the West is your defending world champion Los Angeles Lakers. They take on the Spurs in the first round. Portland was the 4 seed. They take on 5 Utah. Dallas will play Houston. Denver will play Seattle. In the East, your top seed, the Celtics, take on the Knicks in the first round. Atlanta takes on Milwaukee. Chicago faces Cleveland. And Detroit, the 2 seed, takes on the Washington Bullets. So that, and our next show will be a week later, and we'll see how some of these series begin. The Stanley Cup playoffs are going on at the moment in 1988. Let's see, a quick check of the standings on April 25th. Looking here. Okay. There's an off day in the Wales Conference Finals. The Bruins, JR, leading the Montreal Canadiens 3-1 in that series. In the other Wales Conference semifinal, the Capitals and the Devils are playing each other. And that series is tied at 2 with Game 5 coming up in New Jersey. In the Campbell Conference semifinals, one series is 3-1, the Red Wings leading the Blues. And sadly, Mr. Nelson, on this evening at the Northlands Coliseum in Edmonton, the Oilers completed a 4-game sweep of your Calgary Flames with a 6-4 win for Mr. Gretzky. So the Oilers sweep the Flames 4 straight in the Campbell Conference semifinal.
Yeah, well, maybe the Flames will do better next year.
Maybe, we'll see. And, I mean, another cup win here for Gretzky, and he'd probably be an Oiler for life, right? I would assume so. Anyway, that is your pop culture report, JR. Back to the garden.
All right, Gorilla Monsoon's in the back talking to Ted DiBiase, reminding him he didn't win the title tonight. Ted says he did everything he could and said he's done everything he said he would do. And tonight, in Savage's first title defense, he won. Ted also says Savage has the WWF rule book behind him, but he proved what a man he was tonight. He is the champion, and Savage has to face him again. I thought this was a great promo by DiBiase.
Yes, it was.
Gorilla then chats with Hercules, who says his unanswered questions from WrestleMania 3. And Gorilla corrects him. He's WrestleMania 4. Tonight he finishes, although there are still unanswered questions, because him and Billy Jack Kane's today non-finished at WrestleMania 3. So
yes.
Maybe that's what he meant. Tonight he finishes his issues with the Ultimate Warrior. And Gorilla then talks to Demolition, who chastises Mr. Fuji, Gorilla chastises Mr. Fuji on how they won the titles. Fuji laughs it off, says they'll prove to be great champions thanks to his hard training. Smash has Strikeforce of former champions, and they will win like Fuji told them to. Axe says Strikeforce isn't hungry enough, and they have to come to the Demolition's backyard this time. Al is with Randy Savage, says he doesn't care what DiBiase says. He's the champion thanks to WrestleMania. He wanted to win badly tonight, but it was a shallow victory for Ted, and demands a rematch and will be in Jack Tunney's office tomorrow. Al then talks to Strikeforce, and Martel says they are fired up for revenge from WrestleMania after they had the title stolen. Tito says they are the better team and have guts and determination to get their belts back. So there's your interviews. I thought they're all pretty good tonight. Back to the ring is Jose Luis Rivera takes on Barry Horowitz. How this match is happening at this point, whatever. But I guess we're letting everyone get back to their seats. Al's impressed with Barry, thinks he should go the singles route because he's been teaming with Steve Lombardi of late. We start the slugfest until Jose Luis gets a backdrop. Al says Rivera has all the tools but lacks the killer instinct, which Gorilla says you have to be born with. Al says Pedro had that instinct, and if he would have taught it to Jose Luis, he would have been champion. I like Al because he's the same nationality. It's all on Pedro's back to get these guys prepared. Jose Luis works the arm for a while until Horowitz catches him with a kick to turn the tide. Alan Guerrero recaps some Mania results as this drags on. The crowd isn't very interested at all as Barry works through some fine offense, gets through some pin attempts, grinds a front face lock, and then a head scissors, and we get a conversation of all sorts of stuff, including the photographers at ringside. Al gets says Barry has good moves, but follows him with real bad ones, and he doesn't get it all yet. Barry keeps laying in strikes and tries a variety of pin attempts until he gets caught and slammed off the top. Jose Luis lands some basic offense, dropkicks Barry to the floor, slingshots him to the middle buckle, follows with a very weak dropkick, whiffs on a second one, and Barry gets a Russian leg sweep for the win. A pretty soft loss for Rivera, but a nice win for Horowitz. The match went nowhere slowly, and nobody really cared. But I thought there was, again, enough proficiency in there as far as move execution and structure to go star and a half. I just, you know, there was just no stakes to it. It was just kind of blah. What'd you think, Hal?
It was really blah. I went dead. Rivera is one of the least interesting baby faces of all time. He's just no appeal. There's just no heat at all. When he's on offense, the building's as quiet as a library, basically. And we've seen this in the past, and we all know his being cuckolded and all that by Johnny Rods. And I mean, he's just got nothing going for him. Barry Horowitz, he's a loser. Barry Horowitz is also kind of a loser. I mean, that was his gimmick anyway. Right. He lost a lot, but he's much more interesting. But he couldn't really drag much out of Rivera here. This was when the crowd finally had enough, and you do start to hear some boring chants for this one. Yeah, it's just, it was like the opener all over again. I really dislike this one.
There's a word that Lord Alfred forgot to mention in the first match. Some severe cuckolding going on. Lord Alfred, Steve Lombardi, he's created cuckolding with Pat Patterson.
He loves the casual sex with Pat Patterson.
I give this a star. Your match time, by the way, what do you think, Kel? How long do you think it was?
12 or 13 minutes.
38:50. No, I'm only kidding. felt like 38 minutes.
Wow.
No,
you know, if you had said it, I don't think anyone would have questioned it, honestly.
No, right. No, right. 10:39 was your match time.
Oh, okay.
I will say, though, that if this match had to happen tonight, at least it was after the interviews. The crowds, you know, took a breather with the interviews after all the Savage DiBiase stuff. So if these two schlubs had to wrestle, this was probably the fine spot for it. 10:39 is probably a bit much, but I don't know where else you would have stuck the time on this one. Maybe you could have given, you know, Savage DiBiase another 3 or 4 minutes. But I got to be honest with you, him being a conquistador, I didn't even think Jose Luis Rivera was still in the company in 1988, to be honest with you. So seeing him kind of came out of nowhere, in my opinion. I don't know. Does it seem like a backup match? I don't know. Who would have actually thought that putting these two on the card was actually a smart idea?
It might have been a makeup for the Valentine Steamboat match.
Yeah.
I think it might have been. I could not imagine these guys actually putting this match on as like a match for some actual reason. I don't know. Anyway, there's not much more to say. If these two had to wrestle, this was a good spot for it. Out of the interviews, the crowd's still kind of hot from the DiBiase Savage stuff. So if these two had to go, this was a good spot for it. And it was all right. I gave it a star, which is probably being slightly generous. But, not much more to say. Again, I didn't think Rivera was still with the company in terms of wrestling as himself. I knew he would conquistador it up a little bit, but I thought that's all he was doing. So, anyway, Barry gets the big win.
I'm making a snow like Sheriff Pete, and I guess I've taken on the role of
Meltzer.
Showering the jobbers. All right, up next we have a rare women's title match. Sensational Sherry takes on our old friend Desiree Peterson. It's been a while. Our old fave Dez is back to battle this aimless champion Sherry, who gets booed on her way out. Al says Desiree has sparkle and inspired moves. I'm gonna love Al. Sherry has issues with the tie on her top, which is broken. After messing with that for a while, we get started. Gorilla says we have a brand new women's title belt. Talks about Sherry's new hairstyle. Desiree works over Sherry to start, getting two on a crossbody, focusing on the arm. Desiree unloads her offense, getting two counts where she can, picking apart the arm. The crowd's quieted way down as Desiree cranks a headlock, and Al says Sherry has not been crisp. They look like they're moving in slow motion, too, especially on a monkey flip. Desiree gets a slam for two. Sherry finally turns the tide and rams the challenger to the corner. Sherry chucks Desiree outside, but the challenger comes back with a flurry. Sherry comes back with a hard spike to the mat, using the hair and getting the win. Again, technically fine, moving in half speed, though. And the crowd is totally checked out. I like Desiree, and she looked decent here. And Sherry got more offense than usual. She's usually just out there meandering around. And this one, again, I was between a star and a half and a star. I had them both marked down in my notes. I'm going to go a star. I feel like this is where he hamstrung us without using the quarter, Scott, in a lot of these, because I think a lot of these would be in that quarter range. But there was enough fineness here, but they really were moving slowly through a lot of it. And I kind of blame it on Sherry. Like, she is not impressed at all in this run as champion yet. And I am a fan of her as a, you know, person in the world of wrestling. I'm waiting to see something, and I haven't seen it yet.
Your match time, 7:29, and of course, Desiree. She's one of our favorites from that fucking fistfight brawl she had with
Judy Martin.
With fucking Judy Martin. Where's she? I think the problem here isn't. I'm curious your thoughts, both you guys. I feel like because the division is not taken seriously, that I think some of these girls might have kind of half-assed some of these matches. obviously the division is not what it was even 2 years ago compared to now. I mean, think of all the women that we've had to watch. Brock and Robin, who's utterly abysmal. Sherry, who's good on 80% of the days and on 20% of her days. And then you've got, you know, some like throwovers like, you know, Velvet McIntyre and some of these other ones that, you know, looked good a while ago and now they're practically gone. So, I mean, I just have a feeling that the women in the company are like, not with it because the division's not with it, you know? And I think that's why we're getting some like half-ass matches here. And that's not the way. I'm not saying that's the right way to do it. I think it's. I mean, you should show up every night, mm-hmm. regardless of what's going on. But I do feel like the division is because it's not taken seriously that these women kind of sleepwalk through these matches. And Kel, I have a feeling that's what happened here because Sherry's definitely better than this. I gave it a star and a half, so I actually was the one with the throwing the snowflakes around in this one.
Wow.
But at the same time, I think Desiree really. I've always kind of liked her in the ring, and she's always a lot of fun in these MSG matches. But JR's right. I feel like Sherry is should be doing more as a good heel champion, and she's not. But I think the reason is because the division is so half-assed that I think they're not taking it as seriously as they should because there is really no division. So that's what I think. But that's what I think happened here.
Yeah, no. Outside of the Jumping Bum Angels and the Glamour Girls in the previous year. Yeah, the division is a ghetto and has been forever. I mean, this is basically Moolah era work. I mean, it was really sloppy, no heat. I love Sherry Martel to death. She's one of my all-time favorites, and it pains me to have to give this match a dud, but I did. It was just too sloppy. Desiree Peterson's okay. I love that match against Judy Martin that you guys reviewed way back. That was a great match, but you couldn't tell from here. It was like a totally different wrestler. She looked very uncomfortable at times, and Martel was pretty sloppy here. And right from the get-go, when Sherry was having like that wardrobe malfunction before the match, I don't know if that was just to get heat or if legit her top was coming off.
But, yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, it was weird having the ref have to tie it. That kind of was an omen for... gonna have it's too bad because Martel's talented and you know she's a good heel and they could have done more with her, but yeah, this was not a good match at all.
I'm waiting for our first good Sherry match. Hopefully we'll get it soon. We'll see.
Yeah, I
hasn't come
know.
Yet. All right, next up, we have another WrestleMania 4 rematch here. This one between, again, two big boys, two hosses, and hopefully it's better than Atlantic City. We'll see. Warrior comes flying in, and that is the Ultimate Warrior, I should say, taking on the Mighty Hercules. Warrior comes flying in. They battle over the chain, which Warrior ends up with as Herc hits the deck. The crowd is hot for Warrior as he stomps around. Herc returns, and we get a big stare down and some shoving before locking up. We keep getting stalemate lockups with Hercules bailing until finally Warrior heats up and chops and smacks Herc around. Herc catches a charging Warrior with a clothesline and slugs away, but Warrior keeps fighting through it, showing good resolve and power. Warrior decks Herc with a clothesline, but Herc leverages him to the floor. He slides out and punches away. Warrior powers out of a knuckle lock, but Herc cracks him back down. Gorilla wonders where Bobby Heenan is. It must be no managers tonight. It's weird. Liz and Virgil, the only ones here. Herc hammers away and grabs a bear hug. Warrior slugs out, but Herc cuts him down with a back elbow for two. Al rips him for a lazy cover after a great move, and the two collide and crack heads on a charge. Warrior falls on Herc for a close near fall that the fans and Al bid on. Warrior pops up, gets a real nice power slam for another great near fall, and business is really picked up here. Both men get up slowly. Herc just decks him with a punch and some blows, but Warrior shakes him off and goes into his spastic contractions, as Gorilla says. Warrior fires back with punches and clotheslines, drops Herc with a nice delayed press slam, and picks up the hard-fought win to a big pop. I like this a lot. It was a lot of fun. Way better than Mania. Where the fuck was this in Atlantic City? They worked their asses off and really built a good match. The near falls and the big bombs late were great. The finish was a star moment, too, with the huge pop, the way Warrior finished him off, and a really nice showing for both. And Hercules, This is why I was kind of disappointed at WrestleMania. Like, he's been a stalwart on these MSGs. We've seen this before with him. We saw it last year. His match at WrestleMania kind of sucked with Billy Jack, and then they had some pretty decent ones at MSG. So he's been a kind of a house show warrior a lot of this. And speaking of warriors, Ultimate Warrior, looked good here, too. I think this is some of the best we've seen out of him. So I went 2.5 on this. Kelly, I really dug it. I liked the power offense by both. I thought they put together a real nice match, and it really made up for the WrestleMania disaster.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, too. Totally out of nowhere. I haven't seen the WrestleMania 4 match between them in years. I've seen it, but it's been a long time, and my memory of it was that it wasn't anything special, so I wasn't expecting too much from this. So, yeah. Great crowd heat throughout. Mm-hmm. Big pop for the Warrior, already getting that, you know, next level star reaction. There was a Warrior chant early on. I'm thinking these guys probably had wrestled quite a bit, each other quite a bit by this time, so that definitely helps. They've probably got a good routine down. Because, yeah, the work was relatively crisp in this. No botches. Warrior's clotheslines, you know, pretty clunky. But other than that, the crowd stayed hot, even throughout the bear hugs and the test of strength and stuff like that, which could have killed it, but no. Yeah, this match was way better than I thought it was. The power slam by Warrior was great. And the finish was, yeah, the press slam. I was expecting some sort of screw job here for some reason. But getting the press slam and then holding him and then dropping him and get the pin, great dominant win for the Warrior. My only critique is he didn't do the full finisher with the splash included,
right,
for some reason.
Keep it in the holster, kind of, you know, for when he needs it.
I guess, or maybe that wasn't part of it yet. I'm not sure if he developed.
I haven't seen him do it yet, so he might not have it yet.
Yeah, because you can tell. I mean, in hindsight, everything is 2020, but it felt like, there's just something missing to make it. Just to make it the perfect finish. And somebody obviously noticed that backstage helped Warrior add that to his finish. But yeah, and Hercules totally no-sold the finish too. He's up and posing afterwards. But whatever.
Herc always does Herc, man.
Got to get your heat back. But Herc, I went two Herc. And a, yeah, Herc being Herc. I went 2.5 as well. Super surprised, and really cool match.
Your match time. All right, let me ask you this, JR. How long do you think this match was?
7 something.
12:48.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
I didn't feel like it.
No.
12:48. I gave it 2.5, just like you, JR.
The match of Mania was, 4 minutes? And,
So,
yeah, if you saw this at 12, you would have been like, oh, God. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice surprise.
No, I enjoyed it a lot. I think, again, sometimes it's funny. Sometimes we always talk about, technical guys need lots of time. But power guys, I think, need time as well. And everyone thinks, oh, you shouldn't give two power guys, longer than 5 minutes. But sometimes they need the time to tell a story as well. And particularly in this era, you got two guys who obviously have limited ability. But give them the time. And they obviously are in the business for a reason, besides their look. And, you gave them 12 minutes and they put on a pretty good match. And I think what we're going to see over time is that the Ultimate Warrior, he may not have had the best promos on the planet a lot of times, but
in his own way.
In his own way they were. But I think the guy knew how to tell a story in the ring with what limited ability he had. And I think you're going to see that more and more as time progresses. And this was the first example of it. Now, he got lucky in the sense that over the next, maybe 3 years, he would be facing guys 10 times better than Hercules. But still, I mean, Herc knew what he was doing, and I think that's – I wouldn't want to be as surprised that this match was good and certainly better than their match at WrestleMania. Because I think if you give the Ultimate Warrior that time, you're going to get a halfway decent match. And if you got a guy like Hercules who can get his way through the ring pretty good – then you're going to end up having a better match than you think you are. And that's what you had here. And I think we'll see that out of the Warrior as time moves on, that you give him a decent amount of time, a decent opponent, maybe, some guys are just slugs, but a guy like Hercules who can get his way through a match, I think you could survive. And I think that's what we got here. I was stunned when the match was 12:48 too. I was expecting maybe, you know, maybe 8 minutes, which would be, I mean, obviously longer than Mania.
Right.
But not 12 minutes or 13 minutes.
Herc's definitely been surprised. One of my biggest surprises doing this whole revisit. I mean, he's definitely been one of the guys I've been most impressed with seeing some of his, you know, outside of the big pay-per-view matches, which never really crackled much. But seeing him on these shows has really kind of given me a better appreciation for him, especially as a heel. And really controlling a match, you know, and even the match with Hogan on Sunday's main event was good too. So, all right, the Fink comes out, runs down next month's card. And that brings us to our final match of the night, and that is our another final rematch from WrestleMania, and that is with the tag team championships on the line is the new champions Demolition taking on the former champs Strike Force. Demos had a massive win in Atlantic City, and the crowd was loving it then. As Strike Force got knocked off the mountain, here the former champs get a warm welcome, and the champions get kind of a mixed reaction, but they're looking like stars. They got the gear, they got the titles, their overall presence, everything about it. Is making them feel like pretty much a star level here. We get a hot start with all four men brawling. Martel gets Axe in the Boston Crab. The ref is dealing with Tito, though, and Smash breaks up the hold. Martel dodges an elbow drop and goes to work on Smash's arm. The challengers start quick tagging and double teaming. Strike Force is all fired up as they work over both champions, focusing on the arms and rallying the fans. Axe eventually clubs Martel from the apron, and the champs start to go to work with some rugged offense. And the champs work seamlessly, beating on Martel, using all of their weight to keep him grounded. Tito tries to rally his partner, and Martel eventually lands a boot to a charging Smash. Martel gets a tag, but the ref misses and blocks it. Martel gets a big flying back elbow and crawls to make the tag. Tito comes in and cleans house on the champs, gets a flying forearm on Smash, but Fuji gets on the apron, and the ref ignores the pin to run over to him. Tito then gets the figure four on Smash, but Fuji whacks him with the cane, and Axe covers the win. I thought it was a red-hot match. Tons of nonstop action, even with the sloppy finish in there. And the ref was real stupid here. I don't get why he just ignored the pin and got up to deal with Fuji. Like, they should have had Martel go over there, and then the ref went to break him up or something. It made it look stupid. It made it look Strikeforce got screwed. But they were on fire here. The crowd was super into them. And Demolition showed some good power, double-team offense. And they really proved to be worthy of the belts, I thought. Strong final match, plenty of action. And, again, I thought it was better than WrestleMania. I went 3 stars on this one, Scott, to close the night.
I believe I agreed with you. Yes, I did. I also gave it 3 stars. Your match time, 7:22. I thought these two have really good chemistry as well. And I think, you know, I know we've seen, obviously Demolition went through some personnel changes in the year leading up to from when they debuted to when they won the titles at Mania. But I think you really start seeing chemistry now a lot. And two experienced guys who can work with any teams, and you're going to see them from here on out work with very different teams, power teams, technical teams, high-flying teams. Here you got kind of a hybrid of high-flying and technical with Tito and Martel. And I thought they looked great. This was one match that, you know, didn't have to totally match Mania in the sense because they were given time in Mania like they were given time here. Of course, the roles were reversed, and it was Martel and Tito were the challengers. But I thought overall they looked good. The crowd really loved Demolition and Strike Force. Both teams got actually kind of decent face pops. Obviously, Strike Force got more. But you can even tell at this point that the fans are starting to dig Axe and Smash. And you knew that at some point down the line, we don't know when, Kel, but as the timeline moves and the meter moves on Demolition's popularity, that eventually a face turn was inevitable. They just had that look that was really cool. Yeah, Fuji, you know, keeps them heels. But in the grand scheme of things, this was the team that the fans were going to get into eventually. So having said that, I thought this was a great match. I don't know if Strike Force is buried per se.
No.
But it's evident that they're not. But it's evident that they're not in a position to win a second title anytime soon.
Well, see, yeah, I don't think it's on them. I think it's on Demolition being so head and shoulders above, like,
yeah,
which I think is what you're trying to say. So yeah, so, I mean, Strike Force is, yes, it's none of their own doing, but they're clearly just, you know, they're not sniffing. Demolition's got the belts for a while. It's very clear by the way they're positioned, the look and the star power and the presence and everything else. It was a shrewd move, and no, you're right. I mean, Strike Force isn't sniffing it, but again, it's not really on. It's nothing to do with them per se. It's more great Demolition is.
No, I agree, and I wasn't alluding to that. If it sounded like that, I apologize. That's not my point was Strike Force at the moment. I mean, obviously they were getting the quick rematch. That was seemed to be the premise of the evening's theme. But obviously there is a myriad of great teams down the line in the company. You know, the Bulldogs still may want a shot, and I don't know, the Bees are kind of floating around still, and you know, obviously the Hart Foundation. So, and then we would see the division kind of grow a little bit, and we'll get more into that as the year progresses. But yeah, no, I'm clearly not blaming Strikeforce at all. I apologize if it came off that way. But what I'm saying is, obviously, Strikeforce and Demolition were not going to be a long-term program. The result of this match shows that. It's not like, I guess you could say, Kel and JR, like DiBiase Savage, where you knew more was going to come from that. Like, if Savage won that match clean, you're like, all right, well, that feud's over. Obviously, there was clearly more legs on that feud, whereas here it was evident Demolition was shutting the door on Strikeforce and opening up, you know, and someone was next in line. Having said that, the match is very, very good, and Strikeforce is still great in the ring. But what do you think of Demolition, the chemistry thing with Demolition, Kel? That, well, first of all, your thoughts on the match and how they've kind of evolved from the personnel change early on to where they are right now.
Yeah, I really like the match. Really good match. Fast-paced, quick, to the point. Great heat. Great work by everyone involved. And yeah, really good stuff. And yes, the finish. One of my big pet peeves, of course, is referees looking stupid. And this referee who looks like Wolfman Jack. He's got a beard and with prowl. Like salt and pepper hair. Yeah, I don't know his name, but he's been around for a while and totally looks like Wolfman Jack. But yeah, horrible, idiotic officiating at the end. Missing Tito's pin and then conveniently being there for the demo's pin. But yeah, to the popularity of Demolition, I mean, yeah, it was evident here. It was evident much before this that the crowd was behind them. They had that, you know, they were ass kickers, really cool music. I think that's a big part of it, was the music was, you know, everybody loved that, super memorable. And they dominated everybody pretty much. And also at the same time, the good looking baby faces, that was kind of becoming passe, and the fans were starting to reject that. They were starting, you know, we're slowly approaching the 90s. We're getting slowly more and more into the cool heel era. You can see it happening with each passing year. The crowd's getting more into the heels and less into a lot of the goody-goody baby faces from the 80s and the 70s before that. But yeah, I went 3 stars 2 on it. It was only, 7-8 minutes? Really fast. 7:22. I mean, yeah, it was the last match of the night, too, so they weren't going to get a ton of time. But and Strikeforce, I mean, and this goes back to the booking of the world title in the 3-match series, that Vince was still booking a lot like his father, and the tag scene was booked like his dad booked it, where you'd have a strong heel team mostly, usually as the champs, then you'd have a babyface win, but that would only be sort of like a transition to the next heel team that came into the territory. And, you know, Vince inherited that booking style and then kept going. Strikeforce was kind of, I think, just always like a transitional team to go from the Hearts to Demolition. I don't think there was any long-term plans for them. They were a great team. Two of my favorite guys. At the time, I was so heartbroken when they lost, because Tito especially was one of my favorite wrestlers at the time. And yeah, but then again, we'll see how the formula changes quite quickly here. Mm-hmm. With the way they book the Demolition going forward. So times are changing, but yeah, really good match and an interesting snapshot of the time for the crowd's reaction.
I think it was smart too to keep this short and like a sprint. We've seen that a bunch with these tag matches to close the shows. Because they're really, you know, by this point of the night, nobody wants to get into chin lock mania. So it's good to not have any rest holds, really. Keep the quick tags coming and just keep a frantic pace. And that's what they did. So it's an interesting night. A ton of WrestleMania rematches, most of which were actually better than Mania, which I thought was interesting. So if you count Brett and Bad News, which I do, because it's basically a Mania 4 match. We had 1, 2, 3, 5 WrestleMania 4 rematches tonight. Mm. Good. And I think they were all better. I think they were all better than what we saw at Mania. So it was interesting that they did that. So it was a good show, though. I enjoyed it overall. So why don't we get to our awards, and then we can talk about it. So let's start things off with our match of the night. To me, was fairly easy choice of DiBiase Savage. You guys agree?
It's a tough one. I like that match. I don't know. I really like Bad News and Brett, though. But I know grading-wise, I put that one. I'll go with DiBiase Savage because I graded that one higher. But that Brett Bad News match can't be discounted.
No, definitely not.
So, but I'll go with Savage DiBiase just because I gave it a half star extra.
Yeah, I'll go with Savage DiBiase. It was, you know, a big-time match, super heated. And for me, next would have been the tag, which was really good. But the Savage DiBiase was really good.
Mm. All right, the Cousin Jr., the worst match of the night. I went Boone and Lombardi on this one.
I went Rivera, Horowitz.
Those are both equally great stinkers, but I'm going to have to go with Boone and Lombardi just because everything, including the utterly abysmal commentating, had to go along with it as well. So,
all right. Hogan Award for our MVP of the night. I went with Warrior, actually, in this one. I mean, I thought Savage DiBiase worked hard. They were really good, but to me, this was like the Warrior show, and I thought about just how over he was, the way he bounced back from WrestleMania, and just looked like a star. Like, I thought he gained the most on this night.
Mm. I agree. I wanted to give it to Savage if he had actually won the match, but Warrior definitely showed that, and as I said earlier, he a guy that's going to be a major player, and he showed it tonight that he could wrestle with anybody when need be. Yeah, I agree with Warrior.
Yeah, well, Warrior was really good, but I went with Savage. His performance in the main event was really good. Like I mentioned, the selling, and he just feels like, yeah, I mean, no one can be Hulk Hogan, but he is as close as you're going to get at this time,
right?
As the top guy in the company, and the crowd sees him on that level pretty much, and yeah, he was awesome tonight.
All right, the Uncle Elmer, the worst work of the night. I went with the old Jose Luis Rivera on this one.
Yep, easy choice.
Pretty,
for me.
Pretty evident. Yep.
All right, my best moment, again, I'm going back to the Warrior well, was Warrior's press slam on Hercules. The crowd was just going bananas. It was a big spot for him, gets a clean win. I really dug that match and the finish.
Yeah, the same moment.
Yes, I agree.
Okay. All right, the Morocco Award. Donny Boy was not here tonight, so we get some fresh blood for the juiced up wrestler of the evening. And I went with our old friend Dino Bravo, who hasn't won in a while. Since December, so I went with him. I thought he was the most juiced on the evening.
Yeah, there wasn't a boatload. Even Warrior didn't look that bad. I mean, he'll look worse.
he'll
probably own that award as time progresses, but I thought he looked moderately average compared to Bravo. But believe me, Kel, as time moves on, Warrior will get more than his share.
Yeah, both Bravo and Warrior get bigger, unbelievably, from here. I went with Warrior. It was neck and neck. But Warrior, I mean, it wasn't called the Anabolic Warrior for nothing. So. There you go.
All right, and finally, Kelly, we have a new award. You might have heard. The Patera Award for the worst hair of the night. And Patera won his fourth straight for me.
Yeah, I mean, if Patera's on the show, you kind of have to give it to him. I mean, someone would have to have epic bad hair to
He'll be gone soon, though. Patera's. He'll be gone soon, and we'll see.
Yeah,
see who starts to take that award. But
yeah,
big night for Kenny Boy. Yes. All right, let's go for our overall grade out of 10. You know, I thought it was a pretty good show. Like there was some, you know, we saw the really good Savage DiBiase, Warrior Herc, Brett Bad News, and the tag main event, all really good. But then we also had a lot of low-end stuff, to me, which did balance it out because the low-end stuff ate up a lot of time. So I ended up going 5.5 on this. I don't think it's one of the best shows we've seen, but I think it was better than some of the sludge we've seen. So I thought it felt like a very just kind of middle-of-the-road show with a lot of good and a lot of bad and just kind of evens out.
I gave this a 5. I think it went right down the middle. We did see a decent amount of sludge, but surprisingly good rematches for Mania. Hurricane Warrior was the surprisingly good match of the night. Loved the Brett Bad News. Loved Savage and DiBiase, even though the ending sucked. So the first, obviously, you know, no one in the crowd knew how long Hogan was going to be out. But if this is the first MSG house show without Hogan for a while, I think they're okay. I think they're okay. We did lose a little bit of some work rate tonight. Obviously, Steamboat's gone. We didn't have Valentine. We may have lost a little bit of star power with Andre, but for the most part, I think the crowd was really, solid. So I think the matches were really good. All the rematches were pretty good. Maybe Horowitz didn't have to go 10:39, but I'm good with 5. I think it goes right down the middle. It's got a share of crap and a share of good stuff.
Yeah, and remember, Scott, Hogan was often absent from MSG shows when he was on top, so this is nothing new. And actually, Savage was almost kind of the king of MSG during those years, so he's going to do all right. I went 5.5 on the show. I thought the good outweighed the bad just enough. Yeah, the bad was bad, but it's a typical MSG show with a lot of that. But the good was really good. The main event was great, and the tag at the end was really good. The Warrior match with Hercules was a pleasant surprise, and yeah, the highs were pretty good for this show. Oh, and one last note before I forget: this is the last Gorilla and Al show for 2 years.
Oh wow, really?
Commentary. Yeah, Gorilla's gone until late '89.
Oh, okay.
And next month, Al is still there, and I want to say
you
they
don't want to know.
There's a lot of.
It's actually not Al. It's yeah. It's not
okay, because I was going to say there's a lot of turnover and change and different crews coming up. There's no consistency for the rest of 1988, pretty much.
I've gotten so used to the Gorilla Al team. I'm a little sad.
Well, maybe Pac got an Al's face after this and said, "What you doing?"
All right,
Lombardi.
So that'll do it for this week's edition. Scott, we'll be back next Monday with our buddy Peter Winston. He's confirmed to be returning. Greetings from Allentown host. Of course, we'll be here for the April 30th, 88 Saturday Night's Main Event. And then the week after that, we'll be back at MSG. We'll talk about that in a week. Mm-hmm. We have a premiere episode of No Holds Barred podcast dropped last Thursday on PlayStation Wrestling Feed. That's me and Aaron George running through a variety of topics, including talking some GWWE tag teams. So should be sure to check that out. And a new episode of the Monday Night Wars Wrestling Warzone podcast with me and Chad will be out this week as well. So be sure to check that out. It's the 10/16 week of TV from 1995, Raw and Nitro. It's the go-home for Indie House 4, so interesting stuff there.
Excellent.
Sure to check those out. Scott, what do you got going on?
Well, due to some scheduling and technical difficulties, the main event that we were going to do this week will be pushed to next week. But this week, Mr. Milton and I will put out our final episode of our 10-part series, our final 10 of the GWWE countdown. And then next week will be our next episode of Main Event, the 1.5-year episode. So we will have our man, Mr. Brandon Howard, on to talk about fiscally the first 6 months of 2018 and a little creative as well, but mostly money, and see where the second half of the year brings us. And then we will have our next TNA pay-per-view, classic pay-per-view recap too. So that'll be next week. So this week, Nate and I will do the last episode of our series on the GWWE Top 100. And next week will be the next episode of Main Event. So stay tuned.
All right. Very good. Kelly, what do you got going on?
Well, WorldCast is still plugging along with myself, Johnny Sorrow, Pete Schumacher. We're getting close to Christmas Star Wars in 1982, which is a pretty big night for the company. But, yeah, the undercard, oof, it's makes this undercard look great, actually, on some nights. But no, still having a great time as always with the boys, and yeah, check that out.
All right, very good. Subscribe to all of our feeds: PlayStation Wrestling, PlayStation Pop, and Pro Wrestling Only. Follow us on social media: facebook.com/placetobenation, place2benation on Twitter, PlayStation.com/Amazon. Shop with us and we get a little kickback, keep the site up and running. Of course, we do have plenty of written material going up on the site as well. Be sure to check that out. Seinfeld has returned, guys. We're going to finish this, I promise. where we started with season 9. Stacey O'Loughlin has her Divas Deep Dive introduction. She'll be doing a new series looking at Divas wrestling in the WWF from 2000 to 2015. So be sure to check our 16. When was the Divas Revolution? I don't know how long that started. 16?
15.
15.
Okay, so there you go. 2015. It's a really good, she's a good writer, a good voice. So be sure to check that out. Also, a new addition to Talk and Pop. Jennifer and Tim had a very interesting deep dive into the life of Steve Willey. That's on the PlayStation Pop feed if you're interested in that. Our Group Watch Champion series kicked off with a look back at Great American Bash 92. That's written. And, of course, I mentioned No Holds Barred. And as well as Mission Indie Possible had a return as well, that podcast. So lots going on, PlayStation.com. New tournament on the way as well. Keep your eyes open for that. Coming soon. More details in the coming weeks. So for Kelly and Scott, I'm Justin. We're out. We'll talk to you next Monday night. Back in Sinus Minute. Talk to you then. Goodbye.
Bye. Hugging like a monkey see, monkey do. Right beside a river boat gamble. Right through my jeans, float through my head. Say I wanna be. Wish me love, oh, wishing well, the kiss and tell, oh, wishing well, a crocodile, she is get up! Come on, rockin' my jeans, floatin' through my head. You made my ride, my baby.